Call the Tax Committee to order. Members, this morning, we've asked the Jobs and Business Committee to join us to get an overview of the proposed expansion at the Mall of America. What we're looking to do today is just get a good understanding of the project and what the potential impact to the state might be. And next week, the Tax Committee will be spending some time about how we figure out the financing plan. But that's not something we're going to figure out today. But today, we thought it would be helpful for the Jobs Committee to take a look at this project also along with the Tax Committee. So we've got pretty good representation from the Tax Committee. How about the Business Committee? How are they?
Where's their chair?
They're still.
Where's their chair?
We'll take care of them.
Senate File 1950, and members, what you see here is in the bill text is the request from the City of Bloomington. This is the bill that that they've been working on, and I agreed to be the author and get it in front of the legislature. So I believe we'll start with Mr. Bill Griffith from Larkin Hoffman, and he works for the mall. And Mayor Winstead, why don't you come up to the table also at the same time?
Morning, Senators, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for this opportunity to be in front of you this morning and present this project to you. We have a number of presenters. We'll try and keep it moving along and be respectful of your time. There is a lot of information to impart to you, and our commitment to you is whatever we don't impart this morning, whatever you don't receive this morning, and whatever you want in terms of data, background, we want you to be fully briefed and comfortable that you understand the project. So please contact any of us this morning or following the presentation. I'm going to start out with just a brief overview, and then I'll turn it over to Mayor Winstead to present the city's position on the project. We have a great opportunity this morning and during this session to expand the state's top attraction. It's the top attraction not only in the state but in the Midwest. We would like to make it the top attraction in the country. People ask us, does it still attract people from around the world? The answer is yes. 2.5 million visitors come from other places beyond the United States to visit Mall of America. They come in part because of the favorable exchange rate. They come in large part because of the work of the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau and the mall's tourism staff to attract and bring visitors to this state. And so 15 years after its opening, it's still attracting visitors from as far away as Japan, as far away as Europe and the Middle East and Asia. And that's great for the state because it means new dollars coming into this economy that turn over not just at the mall but beyond the mall's doors, throughout the state, throughout the region, attracting convention business, attracting visitors, shows, business to the state, well beyond Mall of America. What else does it do for the state? Jobs. Jobs are very important to this community. As we compete on a global stage, we always have to refresh and renew our jobs program. What do we do with Mall of America? Phase one was built with labor. Minnesota labor built phase one. It built phase one at a time when there was a recession on in this area and in the country and provided thousands of jobs and wages for families here in Minnesota. We will provide thousands of jobs in phase two and wages for families in Minnesota at a time when the residential construction slowdown has created a shortfall of work for those laborers. Finally, taxes. This has been a huge tax generator for the state of Minnesota. Almost $500 to $600 million in new taxes since we opened. And Tony Arleman, our financial consultant, will take you through that in some detail and answer your questions. So what we're talking about this morning is an opportunity for the state to invest in a program that is about jobs, it's about tourism, and it's about new tax revenues. And I don't have to tell this committee, but those new tax revenues go into the state's general fund and fund schools. They fund health care. They fund roads and bridges. They fund all of the things that the state budget does every year. And this project has thrown off an enormous amount of new taxes. 50% of all of the sales that occur at Mall of America are from people outside the state, from as close as Hudson and as far as Japan and the Middle East. Those are new dollars coming into the state to create opportunity and economic benefit for this state, for this region. That's our message this morning. And the simple approach, and sometimes the simple things are the hardest to accomplish, but the simple approach is to capture in some way a small percentage of that new dollar. Now, we don't want to recycle the dollars around the community. We want to capture some portion of the new dollar coming into this economy, harness it for public infrastructure. Again, not to go into private buildings, not to fund owners' profits, but to fund public infrastructure. Every good economic development project is built on public infrastructure. I don't care if it's the convention center downtown. I don't care if it's one of our arenas. I don't care if it's any project that drives jobs, whether it's on the Iron Range or Duluth or Rochester. It's built on public infrastructure. There's no getting around it. That's the public's role. And that's what we're asking, is to build public infrastructure that supports this economic development opportunity. So that's our request this morning, to capture some portion, some small portion of the new dollars that are driven into this state by this huge attraction, to make it fresh, to make it new, to have another 15, 20, 30 years of success for the region because of our wise investments in this time frame. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mayor Gene Winstead. Before I do, I just want to say something about the partnership with the City of Bloomington. It's been a tremendous 20-year ride with the City of Bloomington. They were out front in 1985. They went out with a global request for proposals and landed this project for the great benefit of the region and the state, and I want to thank the city for that, for being so visionary and providing leadership for this project. So thank you, Mayor Winstead.
Well, thank you, Bill.
Mr. Mayor, your name and who you represent for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Gene Winstead, Mayor of the City of Bloomington. And here this morning really to speak to what the benefits have been and what's gone on in the City of Bloomington and all that has happened over the last 20 years. And the City of Bloomington and its Port Authority really fully support this legislative request for infrastructure and how to leverage $1.8 billion worth of investment in phase two for the Mall of America. The city has definitely benefited from phase one of the mall, but the state of Minnesota really has proven to be the largest beneficiary and in the form of taxes and other things that have been generated by the mall. And phase two will do nothing but continue that. The city and the Mall of America are asking the state to play a more significant role in phase two as it has been the major beneficiary in the majority of the taxes as well as the tourism. To go back a little bit in history, it goes back a couple of decades ago when the city stepped forward and went out with an international search for proposals for developments on what was then the Met Center site, the vacant Met Center site. And in 1988, the city entered into a redevelopment contract with Mall of America, and really the city did take the risk on the development of phase one. And when Mall of America acquired the Met Stadium site and the old Met Center site, they were both tax-exempt properties. And the Mall of America did put these two major and significant sites back on the tax rolls. And really, those tax dollars then each year benefited both Bloomington, the region, and really the state. One of the things that's stated is the Mall of America now is not paying taxes and things like that. And I'm here to tell you that the Mall of America is one of the top taxpayers in the state. In property taxes alone, it's paid $17.2 million in the year 2006. And of that $17.2 million, $6.5 million was captured for the TIF district, for the TIF payments. $5.3 million was paid to the state of Minnesota for the general property tax. $4.3 million went into the fiscal disparities pools, the regional pool. $640,000 went to the school district in excess levies, as well as that $6.5 million that was captured by TIF. And if it weren't in a TIF district, that would represent $2.3 million that would have gone to the city of Bloomington to its general fund. So it does pay taxes, a significant amount in the state of Minnesota. The city to date has approved preliminary development plans for an additional 5.6 million square feet of development in phase two of the Mall of America. And it has really taken more than 2 years to get to that point. including numerous studies that we have done, and they've been studies on everything from traffic, parking, and extensive environmental reviews. The city began investing in this project over 20 years ago, and these types of development opportunities just don't come along very often for either any city or even a state. And we do need to maximize all that we can do from a city's perspective as well as the state. The city of Bloomington has invested $108 million in the Mall of America Phase 1, and we're prepared to invest an additional $136 million in Phase 2 of the development if it is able to develop out to its maximum 5.6 million square feet. And it would need this additional state investment also in order to do that. Public funds were provided. The local sources were the tax increment, and there's a liquor and lodging tax in the city of Bloomington. The state did not financially assist in the development of Mall of America Phase 1. The city did take on that obligation. Public funding, needs to be understood, is only used for roads, sewers, transit, and parking. And overall, if it were to go forward as being requested, it would be no more than 17%, including the state share. The city share in that would be 10%, with the state then at 7%. Not $1 of public money goes to support the private development. Bloomington residents directly pay nothing for the Mall of America. All public funding comes from new taxes generated by the Mall of America. There were no additional monies or taxes levied to support the Mall of America. The Mall of America Phase 1 will come out of its tax increment district in the year 2015, as it was always planned, and it's on track to do exactly that. I have to reiterate the positive things that Bloomington has received from the construction of the Mall of America. We have had built in proximity to the mall 1,705 hotel rooms that have added $83 million to the tax base of the city of Bloomington since the mall was built 15 years ago. The light rail transit comes into Bloomington, and I don't think it would have if it weren't for the Mall of America and a terminus there. And the Mall of America, I think, has demonstrated that it has driven ridership on that light rail transit line. With the Mall of America and that light rail transit line, it has really been a catalyst for additional development in the city of Bloomington, and specifically including the Bloomington Central Station project, which is a $600 million transit-oriented mixed-use development that's online in Bloomington, as well as we will be building a new transit facility on 28th Avenue, a large parking structure to accommodate much of the traffic, the park and ride that is going on because of light rail. Our Convention and Visitors Bureau promotes local hospitality industry, and really so do all the other Convention and Visitors Bureaus in the area. And they do use the Mall of America as a calling card, and it has proven to be successful. Over 1,200 Bloomington residents are employed at the Mall of America. The Bloomington General Fund receives over $1 million in taxes from the Mall of America each year, and that is above and beyond all the costs of services that we need to provide for the mall. $5 million has been paid to Bloomington schools from Phase 1 in the form of referendum levies, so that's going on. The Mall of America has not increased local taxes. In fact, once the public improvements are paid for, it will then be providing tax relief for the residents of the city of Bloomington. It really has been demonstrated the Mall of America attracts a considerable amount of people from outside the state and outside this region, as well as a great number of international travelers. These visitors generate considerable revenue, not only in sales at the Mall of America, but it needs to be stated, too, that they spend a great deal of money outside of the Mall of America in Bloomington and in the state of Minnesota. And others will be speaking to these issues as we go forward here. But I'd like to emphasize now that Bloomington is definitely prepared at this time to move forward with this new development, this added development, and really the time is now, and I think we all need to then consider it and maximize all that we can do at this point in time. So to reiterate, the timing is positive and the timing is now for us to act upon this. So thank you, and of course we'll be here, and I'm sure there'll be some questions going forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Next we have Maureen Balsh.
Mr. Chairman, can we ask our questions now? I have a question.
Sure, Senator Murphy, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Mr. Mayor, in your handout here it says public funding is only used to pay for roads, sewers, transit, and parking, and it's less than 17% of the total development cost. And then it says not $1 of public money goes to pay for the private development. Well, which is it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, we speak to that. When the city of Bloomington made contribution in phase one, it was for the development of roads, sewers, and parking ramps. Going forward in phase two, here again, there is considerable road work to be done, as well as the parking structures, which I think this legislation is requesting the state support on constructing. So when it comes to building either retail centers or entertainment venues, or the public money is going to those infrastructure improvements.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Mayor, I don't know how you can make the statement of not $1 of public money goes to pay for the private development, because without those roads and sewers and other hookups, the private development doesn't happen.
And I'm distinguishing, I guess, Mr. Senator, the difference between infrastructure and the building of a department store, the building of the mall structure itself.
Okay, so Mr. Mayor, why don't you tell me, what's the average wage of some of those folks that work there at the Mall of America?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy, I honestly do not have those numbers. Jobs run all the way from those in management of retail venues, management at the mall, to the entry-level service positions that the mall does also have and provide. So it does run the range. I do not know a specific average wage.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor, maybe you can find that out. Then also find out if there's, health care benefit packages, retirement packages with some of these retailers.
Others may have that information, but if not, we will definitely ferret that out and provide it to the community.
And, Mr. Chair, Mr. Mayor, the 17% that is going to come out of the roads and transit comes out of the budget of the committee I chair, and I'd be real interested in hearing, and I think our committee would be too. So, Mr. Chairman, whenever you go to move your bill around, I think it should probably come to the Transportation Committee so we can hear more about the roads and other infrastructure projects that you need.
I think, Senator Murphy, well, next week we're going to talk about how we might pay for this. I think the plan is to use TIF financing, property tax money for those road projects. And we have some other TIF proposals in the tax bill also. It's unfortunate we don't have money to do transportation with transportation dollars. And we're having to do them with property taxes, but
so Mr. Chairman, so the residents of the city of Bloomington are going to get stuck with the bill again. That already about 30% of their property taxes go to roads because we've been negligent in our duties, and now we're going to, you get a 15-yard penalty in football for piling on.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
I love when Senator Murphy starts talking about football.
We would have been great together.
Don't you think?
Yeah. I would have handed the ball to you, and you would have hit the line.
I would have gone behind the big guys here. Mr. Chair, maybe this is for Mr. Griffith, but if somewhere in this presentation we can hear a little bit about the kind of the state of malls and shopping centers, where this industry is now, I think we've got a gem here in Bloomington, and we've got an ownership that wants to do more. And if someone wants to bring, nearly $2 billion of investment to Minnesota, I think the state should be at the table. So I'm glad we're having this conversation. But I also believe the Germazians, they could go anywhere, right? They could take that $1.8 billion and go anywhere in the country and indeed anywhere in the world. So tell me how the mall and this phase two kind of fits in with the current state of the industry.
Sure. Thank you, Senator. Mr. Chairman, if I may. Maureen Bouch, the Vice President of Business Development, can address your question more fully. I'll say it this way. This developer is looking in India to invest. This developer is looking in China to invest. We have projects that we're competing with in Dubai and other places in the world. We would like this to continue to be not only the state's top attraction, but the top attraction in the country. That's where we want to take this. But to do that, we need a lot of private dollars. You point that out, and I appreciate that. The private investment in this project will be almost $2 billion when it's all said and done. And so we're looking at a leverage factor of about 10% of that is public investment. That's a tremendous leverage factor. The city's portion is 10%. The state's is 7%. But the leverage factor that we're looking at is about a 10-to-1 ratio on private to public investment overall. And that's a tremendous opportunity. Those opportunities we're competing on a global stage, and those opportunities are going to China and India and places where they figured out how to attract that kind of investment. Maureen Bausch will talk about keeping it fresh and all that they've done to recently reinvest, again, private dollars in the project, to reinvest, to attract a new theme for the park, for instance, to reinvest in the basic infrastructure of the property. And it's a big undertaking every year, and we want to keep it on top. That's our message.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, one of the questions I have, do the mall, do you have enough property and land already to do the project that you want? And the only reason I ask that, because we just went through a little bit of a bill that we found out later that actually we passed everything, and then we realized that we didn't really have the land to put the stadium on. But anyway, do you have the land set aside, or do you have to go to Bloomington to get more land?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Day, that's a very good question. Griffith?
We're all set. We have all the land we need. We have 45 acres. And as you'll see in the presentation, one of the significant components of this project, and I think it's again goes back to the vision of 555 Corporation, is they have taken the two buildings and connected them. Previous proposals were to have a skyway or a concourse or some sort of way to convey people from one site to the other. And they said, no, that will not work. It needs to be fully integrated, four floors across Lindau Lane. And so the whole project, 5.6 million square feet, comes over Lindau Lane and connects building to building. And in doing that, we maximize not only the development potential of Phase 2 property, but also the Phase 1 property by connecting the two. What does that require? It requires that the infrastructure, primarily Lindau Lane, be driven under the building to be able to create that maximum building opportunity. But so we've got 4.2 million square feet in Phase 1, 5.6 million square feet in Phase 2. That's the 10 million square foot proposal that 555 brought to town in 1985. That was the proposal they put on the table in 1985, and they're seeing it through, as long as we can find the public infrastructure investment to carry that off.
Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Maureen Bausch. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator. And good morning. My name is Maureen Bausch, and I'm the Vice President of Business Development for Mall of America.
Can you pull the mic a little bit closer?
Sure. I'm really thrilled today to be here with you to share our development plans for Minnesota's top tourism destination to make it bigger and better. This is no doubt great for the state. And 15 years ago when we opened, we really changed the landscape of retail and entertainment, not just for Minnesota, but for the country, because we are one of the top destinations for travelers in the country, and we're lucky to have it in Minnesota. We're on the verge of another tremendous opportunity. Oh, you want me? Okay. And we can create a destination that will keep Minnesota on top of a traveler's list for generations to come with the addition of Phase 2. Today, 40 million guests visit Mall of America every year, and the reason they come to Bloomington in Minnesota is for the entire experience. Mall of America is more than a shopping mall, and we realized that the day we opened and people started getting on planes from all over the world to come to Mall of America. We really are an attraction, not just a mall. And they still come. Today we have 51 packages, travel packages from 30 different countries bringing people to Minnesota. They come because of the whole experience, not just because of the 520 retail stores or the park or the underwater world, even though it has the largest collection of sharks in captivity. They come because of the whole experience. They want to see it all. There's no other destination right now in the United States that can claim that. As Bill said, you can go to Dubai or South Korea or China and find it. But this won't always be the case. we know our competitors are right on our heels. There are many projects close to us in different parts of the country, and they're after travelers that come to Minnesota right now. They covet our tourists. That's why keeping Mall of America fresh and exciting has always been our number one priority. From our experience and expertise in running a destination attraction, it is absolutely key to refresh it constantly. Tourists want to see something new each time they come. In the attraction industry, it's standard practice to add new rides and venues and areas constantly. And those that do attract the tourists year after year and stay on the top of their list. Disney's a great example. They didn't stop developing after California. They went to Florida, and they opened the Magic Kingdom in 1971. And then in 1982, they opened Epcot. In 89, they opened MGM. And in 1998, they opened the Animal Kingdom. And they're not done yet. And Mall of America isn't done yet either. We're really fortunate to have the land and to be able to have this opportunity to develop and actually have the need to do so. It starts with our current property and refreshing it. And every year we announce new tenants that are coming and new attractions. This year was particularly exciting for us. We'll be retheming the park as a Nickelodeon park. And Nickelodeon's the number one brand for children in the country right now, actually in the world, believe it or not. And it will be the Nickelodeon park. And it's much more than SpongeBob. He just gets all the credit. And then Corona's, Cantina number one, will open its first U.S. operation in Minnesota on our fourth floor later this year. Lucky Strike, which is a Chicago-based entertainment venue, will come and take another large portion of the fourth floor. We'll open an 18-hole miniature golf course called Moose Mountain in July. And we will bring a new concept from the Build-A-Bear people called Ride Makers, which is an attraction where you can actually make cars. Kids can make cars. These new additions, along with the millions that we invest every year in keeping that building fresh, is what keeps Mall of America exciting and keeps people coming back. We're bringing that same discipline and drive for unique attractions to the planning and development of Phase 2. For several years, we've researched a number of options, as Mayor Winstead suggested. There's been several research studies, and we looked at what would complement the building we have, what would bring more people from outside Minnesota, and also appeal to the local residents. Mall of America Phase 1 is exceptionally popular with families, and particularly families with children under the age of 12. And we'll keep catering to them. We'll keep meeting and exceeding their expectations. But Phase 2 provides an opportunity to attract a new customer, a little bit older family, a little bit older customer, families with children over the age of 12. And we know that they will travel, particularly families with teenagers will travel if they're going to have fun. And you'll see in the venues that I outlined that we've added a lot for them. We also have an opportunity to expand the square footage in some retail categories that are underserved in the mall today. And customers have expressed interest in seeing more home furnishings, more men's apparel, more electronics, and more sporting goods. So to that end, the expansion plans call for the following. Additional retail, but only about 50% as much as what's in the first building. It's actually a little less than 50%. And we will concentrate on those categories that are underrepresented in the mall today. The first anchor will be a 300,000-square-foot Bass Pro, which is a wonderful facility out of Springfield, Maryland. It'll be Springfield, Missouri, and it will be the first in Minnesota. We'll also have more services, like spas, a wellness center, and medical. There'll be unique hotels. The Kimpton and the Golden Tulip have signed. They are five-star hotels. We'll have two four-star hotels and the Great Wolf Water Park, which is a premier water park right now in the country. We'll also enlarge our event center. If you've been to the mall and you've seen the rotunda, we have about a celebrity a week that comes to Mall of America, comes to Minnesota, to meet their fans. And we're going to expand that by five times and create a town square in the new building. And that town square will also have a public skating rink. They'll have new movie theaters, more upscale movie theaters, the kind that you've probably read about recently. And we've also created a museum-quality exhibit space. And a few years ago, we worked with Smithsonian to develop this space so that museums would really be attracted to it. And it has worked. We have several museums interested. The U.S. Figure Skating Hall of Fame would love to move to Minnesota. They'd love to be at Mall of America and move from Colorado. And they're very serious about it, and they're willing to wait for us. But we also have opened it up to the museum community in Minnesota to use as a gateway to the fabulous venues we already have here, and they are interested. We'll also add other attractions complementary to those that we have in Phase 1, like the NASCAR Motor Speedway, ACES, and LEGO Imagination Center. People call us all the time with the most fabulous ideas, and it's our job to pick and choose which ones will really add value to the property, draw more people from out of state. People with Harry Potter concepts, with magic concepts, with American Idol or Elvis concepts, you name it, they call us. There's no lack of great ideas. It's just choosing which ones will really add value. Our estimate is that Phase 2 will bring an additional $20 million. Oh, and there'll also be a music theater that will draw new performances and performers to the region. We estimate that the new building will draw an additional 20 million visits each year. 40% of those will come from outside of Minnesota. This represents new money coming into the state, and you'll hear from others that this money is spent all over the state, not just at Mall of America. 15 years ago, when we built Mall of America, we provided Minnesota with a real competitive advantage in the battle for tourism dollars. The result, you heard from Mayor Winstead, is a win for everyone, the state, the city, and for the mall. And it's the right time to expand Mall of America. We can't remain a leader if we settle for what we have. If that were the case with Disney, they never would have left California. And where would Orlando be? Where would Florida be today? Bloomington saw the vision 20 years ago and helped us build a world-class attraction for Minnesota. And now we have another opportunity. And with your help, we can expand Mall of America and cement Minnesota's position at the top of travelers' lists for generations to come. Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, let's see, what was I going to ask? Oh, here it is, right here. So currently at the Mall of America, what's the vacancy rate there? How many spots are open?
We're at about 95% leased.
Okay, and on the, you know, I was just out there the other day, like a lot of other people, thousands as a matter of fact, but I was just out there the other day, and it seemed like the fourth floor up there, is that either going under construction or those just sitting empty?
A few years ago, Jillian's, who was the major tenant and owned quite a few, or leased quite a few facilities up on the fourth floor, filed Chapter 13 across, or Chapter 11, I guess it was, across the country. And so we lost them, and we kept that space open on purpose for a while because we really wanted to get a variety of tenants and tenants that fulfilled our family position. Even though it was a nightclub, we wanted a more family-friendly nightclub than what was up there, and we wanted a number of different venues. So the Cantina, Corona Number 1, is a large tenant that's taking the space, as well as Lucky Strike. That was the other one that I mentioned. They'll take a big portion of it. And then we have a comedy club and a comedy hall of fame that will take another portion of it. So I think you'll see it completely open in another 18 months.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, and is it Ms.
Bausch?
Bausch, okay. You know, I was just looking at the new map here, and you've got performance theater, cinema, clubs. You know, I know some people in the entertainment industry, and their business right now is a little bit off. I just kind of mentioned that, just kind of a matter-of-fact deal. But you mentioned Lucky Strike is going in there. Is that a smoke shop or a bowling alley?
No, it's a bowling alley. It's a wonderful, bowling alley. Very high-end bowling alley. Yes.
Oh, and yeah. Mr. Chairman, I don't suppose that there's going to be any smoking allowed there.
No smoking.
Okay. All right. Well, I just thought.
No smoking.
Senator, I had the same question when I first heard the proposal. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Ball?
No. Thank you.
Mr.
Thank you.
Next, we have Bonnie Carlson from the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bonnie Carlson, and I'm the president and CEO of the Bloomington Convention and Visitors Bureau, and have been so for quite a long time. In fact, as I was preparing my notes for today, I was thinking back. It's very hard to even believe that 15 years have passed since this project opened, and I was actually in the city council chambers the night that the Germazian brothers came and presented the idea for the project. And, of course, along with that, we understood the skepticism among many who wondered whether the project would be a success. And what I'd like to tell you today and kind of give you a little bit of my story or the story of the metro area, just exactly how successful that project has been. As you've heard in some of the earlier comments, they talk about the tourism and the value of that and the visitors coming. But a few things to highlight. One of the senators asked a particular question about the status of shopping malls and attractions such as this. And I guess it would be safe to begin with. And when you do the research on all 50 states, shopping comes up as number one, two, or three for a visitor's preference when they are traveling. And what is unique about the mall is the fact that it has entertainment and shopping. It has truly been a destination. And I think that uniqueness has kept it to be what it is today. At 40 million visits a year, that's pretty successful. But I think the important number to look at in that, within that number, is that anywhere between 35 and 37% of those travelers come from outside of Minnesota. Now, I know a lot of you have heard about tourism as an economic generator. It is. It is estimated that a visitor dollar will turn over as many as 4 to 5 times within a community. So, in other words, yes, they are dropping their dollars at the Mall of America and in our hotels and restaurants. But when you look at the attractions, gas stations, it provides jobs. It is truly an economic generator. We can't forget about the international recognition of this project. The project is known regionally, most familiar to the states around us, but nationally as well, and internationally. We receive anywhere over a million tourists a year from internationally. They come from 37 different countries, primarily from the UK, Scandinavian companies, Germany, and Japan. The good news about the international travelers is they spend 2.5 times more than any U.S. travelers. So, of course, we love to have them. But it is an international renowned attraction. But I think the most important thing is that, yes, this project has benefited Bloomington and Minnesota, but I think it's important to talk about the communities within our metro area that it has benefited. For instance, every major convention that comes in to Minneapolis or St. Paul wants to visit the Mall of America. I remember in 1992, one of the very first large conventions, the American Society of Association Executives, 5,000 people, we opened their convention with an event at Mall of America. Today, there is a gentleman that worked for that convention. He's bringing 3,500 people more back, wants to do another event this year in November at the Mall of America. But there's been more since then. You've heard of the International Alliance Convention. You've heard of the AA convention, and there's a unique one called scrapbooking. You've all heard about scrapbooking. That's a phenomenon across the United States. But just alone, 15,000 to 20,000 people come and go to the Mall of America and do this scrapbooking activity. We have one of the largest yet to come, and that's going to be in 2008 with the Republican National Convention. And we already know that there's great interest in visiting the mall. So what does this mean? It means that all of the communities in the metro area, from downtown Minneapolis to St. Paul to the northern and the southern communities, have benefited from the mall. And I would just challenge you, if you if you haven't noticed, to take a look at a promotional brochure from one of these communities. One of the first things they will list is the Mall of America. Quite often I've raised a sort of an eye at the fact that they've positioned the North Metro right next to the mall. But having said that, we let them get by with that because, indeed, they are promoting it. So we hope that we are looking forward to phase two. There is absolutely a tremendous interest from our clients across the nation, both regionally, nationally, and internationally, and anticipation of this project. And we feel that it would be a very good investment for the state of Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Carlson, I understand the attraction to the people who are coming from out of state or within the United States and from outside of the country. But as we grow and as we bring more attractions in, I'm wondering if we aren't pricing Bloomington residents and Minnesotans out of being able to enjoy the amenities that are at the mall. And I don't know if this is something that you've talked about, or as you move forward, and if you don't have a response today, I hope that you would think about incorporating into that some consideration for people who live in Bloomington or who, you know, live in the metro area or who live in the state of Minnesota, because as it grows and becomes more of an attraction, obviously we want to price it in such a way that we do benefit from the people who are coming in and spending their money. We want them to do that. But at some point, it could only continue to be a point of pride for the people who live here if they, too, feel like they can access it and that it isn't something that's happening in their backyard, but they can't afford to go to the mall or they can't afford to get a ticket at the theater or they can't afford to even now buy a season pass to take their children to the park. So I don't know if there's been any thought given to that, but I'd like to put that bug in your ear.
Right. Senator, yes, I think that that is an absolutely very valid point because we see this nationally as well, you know, attractions and such. Where is the price break for the average person to attend and to enjoy the incoming attractions? One of the other parts of our job is we like to promote within the state of Minnesota and just outstate our border states, sort of be a tourist in your own town and come and enjoy what we have. If you can't afford to take your family to Florida, you know, with air and hotel and whatnot, you could get a very good rate in those off-peak times, particularly during spring break and winter. Right around in the Bloomington and metro area, there are times that people could afford that. We have several packages that are available if you'd want to do that. And the other thing that our organization addressed that very fact, and this year introduced the first ever Twin Cities Attractions Pass. There's five attractions on it, the mall, Underwater Adventures, and the park at Mall of America. But there's also the Science Museum and the Minnesota Zoo and a few of the other outskirts attractions where any resident or visitor could buy this pass for like 50% of the total value. I think this is the way of the future, to be able to give those people every opportunity. So very, very well taken.
Anything else, members? Next, we have Clark Arneson, planning manager of the city of Bloomington.
Mr. Arneson is deferring to the mayor, who already covered the city's remarks.
Bell Halligren. From the, and is there Susan Coleman?
Yes, good morning. I'm Val Halligren, and I'm president of the board of directors of the Susan G. Coleman Breast Cancer Foundation. And we hold the visibility of the race for the, it's a Twin Cities Race for the Cure, held at the mall, has provided us as an organization with the opportunity to increase awareness of our mission to eradicate breast cancer as a life-threatening disease and an opportunity to gain further support from the community. The support and generosity of the mall has enabled us to develop what is today the third largest Race for the Cure event in the entire country. In 2006, 50,000 people on Mother's Day there were breast cancer survivors, their family and friends walked or ran for the race. The proceeds from the Race for the Cure are available to all 87 counties throughout the state of Minnesota for research, education, prevention, and treatment. A large percentage to the Minnesota Department of Health for diagnostic services for the uninsured women and the underinsured, programs that are not covered by government funding. We, and this is for women, again, throughout the state of Minnesota, and this has happened since the race began 15 years ago. Our first race, we had 2,400 people, and this is our 15th race, and we'll be at about 50,000 or more. We have an excellent working relationship with the mall staff, and it just couldn't be. We get good comments all the time how great it is to have the race out there. And our next race will be Mother's Day, May 13th of this year. 2 weeks ago, we gifted out $1.8 million to organizations throughout the state, from Duluth down to Wabasha, Minnesota, and up to the Leech Lake Indian Reservation for women who don't have access to a lot of the services that we can provide these dollars for, with the Minnesota Department of Health as being a large share. But last year we gave them $750,000.
Excellent.
Mr. Chairman and Senators, the reason we asked Race for the Cure to speak, it represents one of the larger events, but there are numerous events, hundreds of events, raising money that goes throughout the region and the state. We collected kind of how much has been raised in that building since opening. It's over $100 million has been raised by charities and nonprofits in that building. Sometimes we're asked, what do we do for the community? Do you give back? And we want to make sure that people understand that we do. We work with these nonprofits to create great opportunities for fundraising and charity events.
Mr. Griffith, I have some friends on the range who have diabetes in their family. Is there an event there for diabetes fundraising also? Because I think they've been down and participated in an event.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The JDRF is the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation is a huge event. Maureen Bausch was on their board, and that event has occurred at the mall for several years. It's one of the larger events that we hold.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle.
I appreciate Mr. Griffiths kind of putting this into context here, because the Race for the Cure had a great history and tradition at Southdale,
right.
But literally, Mr. Chair, it outgrew Southdale. It was too big. It was too popular. And if you wanted to continue to grow the Race for the Cure and all the good things it does, you needed a larger scale. You needed a bigger platform to do it. So I'm pleased to see.
First and foremost, we have to run a safe race.
Yeah.
And that's why we needed to move. And it was a very, very excellent choice for us.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair,
in a new facility, we could grow even further and probably be number one in the country. I want to beat Denver.
That's the spirit.
Mr. Chair, it's exciting to see how this has continued. And, you know, I was thinking maybe on May 13th, we could probably all stand for a little exercise around these tables here. I meant a little oxygen, Mr. Chair.
Senator Michelle, you have nothing you want in the tax bill?
I was thinking the tax committee and the business committee, maybe we could have a little friendly competition.
Senator Michelle, I can't run fast, but I can lift heavy things.
You can lift a gavel.
I think Senator Larson can too, and Senator Senjum and Senator Skoy. We got a lot of help here on the tax committee.
That's a good line.
We do the heavy lifting here in the Senate. Thank you, Ms. Hellergan. That was very helpful. Tony Armlin.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Senators, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk about the project financing and talk specifically about some of the tax generation that occurs from the proposed project, and specifically to talk about some of the other economic growth potential that comes from the expansion of the existing mall. The theme that we're going to be talking about this morning is growth. As you will see from the presentation that we're about to give, that the Mall of America and the expansion of Mall of America is truly an economic engine for the state of Minnesota, regionally and locally. And we're going to walk through some of the high points of that, and I really want to leave time for questions. We're going to try to do a summary of very, very large amount of analysis that's been done over the past 18 months putting the project plan together. This is an overview of the project financing, the cost of the project, and specifically looking at the development that are on site. We have two major categories of costs. The first category is the...
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogomar.
Did you mean an economic engine in the same way the University of Minnesota is an economic engine of the state?
I'm not certain in what regard the university is an economic engine by itself.
Well, Mr. Chairman... Senator
Murphy.
Senator Pogemiller, and to the testifier, do you mean economic engine like the largest one in the state, which is agriculture?
I mean in terms of generating jobs and specifically in growth and economic development in terms of new businesses, new revenues that come to the state, new jobs, and also in terms of tax revenues.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman and Senator Pogemiller and the chair of the tax committee, agriculture is still number one, so okay. I think Senator Pogemiller was trying to make a point, and I just wanted to highlight it a little bit.
Mr. Armland, please continue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. In an overview of the total project cost, you'll see that there are two primary components in the development that is on site. This is the expansion of the existing mall onto the new 45-acre site just north of the existing project. There are two primary components. First are the public improvements on site, which include a public parking facility of about 8,000 cars, which costs approximately $181 million. Ring road, utility, grading, pedestrian bridges, et cetera, other public improvements that are on site for $41.1 million, for a total of on site public improvements of about $222.1 million. Next to that is the private investment, the significant portion of the development itself, which is the mall expansion, anchor department stores, office buildings, hotels, the Performing Arts Center, our energy center, which accounts for approximately $1.4 billion. And then tenant improvements that are improvements for the small shops that are inside the mall, another $153 million, for total private investment in the project of $1.6 billion, and a total project value of $1.781 billion. That is the on-site development. There are also approximately about $148 million worth of off-site public improvement for roadway infrastructure and development that will happen adjacent to and surrounding the property in the Bloomington South, Airport South District. The sources of the funding as proposed in both the bill that the city has put forward towards you and the project financing are as follows. We are requesting specifically assistance in the financing for the public parking facilities, the 8,000 spaces that will be added from the state of Minnesota, as well as assistance through the extension of the tax increment financing district for phase two, which will assist us in other on-site public improvements and off-site public improvement costs. All of the private development, all of the development related to the shopping center, to expansion, to the anchors, the office buildings, the hotels, Performing Arts Center, Energy Center, and tenant build-out are going to be privately financed in this model. In terms of the impact of the project, the first most and most important impact is the creation of jobs. In total investment at $1.7 billion, almost $1.8 billion, there will be approximately 15 million construction hours that will be performed by local labor here on site for the project over a 38 to 40 month period, creating approximately 7,000 construction jobs on site. Additionally, There will be approximately $981 million worth of materials invested in the construction of this facility, which, if it is paralleling what we did in Phase 1, will be approximately 85% of purchase from Minnesota companies. So as you can see, when I referred to economic engine, this is an enormous investment into the labor and manufacturing and construction industry here in the state of Minnesota.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogemiller.
I just am not going to accept this as an economic engine of the state. This is a retail development. This is not the same as the University of Minnesota or agriculture. And I just, you got to stop saying that. This is not a sales job before a city council.
Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In terms of the public financing and the investment that goes into the overall project, the split in terms of financing is proposed to be 87.5% for the public financing and the approximately $1.56 billion of investment. Parking facilities at $181 million would be approximately 10% of the total expansion, and the on-site roads utilities approximately 2.3% or $41.1 million of the total $1.7 billion investment. We'd like to give you a summary of the taxes that are generated by Phase 1 and Phase 2. And the next slide shows the generation of taxes that have been created over the past 15 years related to Mall of America Phase 1. Over the period between 1992 and 2006, the mall has generated $751.4 million of total tax revenues to the state, region, and locally. That's broken down in terms of the following categories: state, which includes sales income and property taxes at $476.7 million, regional taxes in terms of fiscal disparities, $90 million, local taxes, including TIF, at $184.4 million, or an average of $50 million per year over that 15-year period.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Armland, can you give us what the number would be under the local taxes if you didn't include the TIF?
Yes, I can. You would subtract approximately $157 million, which has been reinvested into the project for TIF. So that would reduce that local component to approximately $27 million of net throw-off for local taxes.
And so, Mr. Chair and Mr. Armland, so it's fair to say that while the tax was collected, it was put back into a district that was in effect used for the development.
Mr. Chair,
so in effect, Mr. Chair and Mr. Armland, the taxes were paid back to the developer for purposes of the development.
Mr. Chair, Senator, that is absolutely correct.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, I just want to make one statement in that regard. The taxes were not paid back to the developer. They were paid through the TIF district to the city of Bloomington to repay public investments. So the developer never receives the TIF.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Griffith, for what purpose?
For public infrastructure supporting the project, ring roads, sewers, and public parking decks.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
And once again, who's the major benefactor?
The state of Minnesota, Senator. $751 million in taxes paid.
And Mr. Chairman, and there's no benefit to the mall by using the TIF.
Certainly, the mall would not have been constructed without the public investment in infrastructure.
Well,
correct,
Mr. Chairman, and that's my point. I think that the profit that the mall has made, and I'm talking about in total, you know, not just the people that own the mall, but also the people who are there, like Nordstrom, Sears, right on down to the sunglasses shop, is probably substantially north of the $751 million that you're talking about that was raised for state purposes between 92 and 06. I think if you move the decimal point over probably a couple places to the right, you'd realize the profit of the overall business. So I would say that, the state was impacted. But I think the biggest portion of the impact was for the developer and the business owners, and of course the city of Bloomington.
Mr. Armand, continue.
Mr. Chair, thank you. The next slide shows the development of how we see tax growth based on the inclusion of Phase 2. In the first column on this bar chart, we see the $50 million per year that has been generated on average with Phase 1 development. The next set of bars shows both Phase 1 and the addition of Phase 2 in 2015. We anticipate the development, if start construction approximately a year from now, will open in the middle of 2011, with about a four-year period to get to a 95% occupancy level. In 2015, we see a very significant throw-off annually of taxes for Phase 2. In fact, Phase 1 taxes we expect to be approximately $65 million, and Phase 2 an additional $79.46 million. Phase 2 itself, we anticipate, will generate 122% growth in tax revenues to the state, regionally, and locally above existing Phase 1. If you look forward past 2015 to the 2011-2030 period, a 20-year period going forward, both facilities will average over that period $74.4 million per year for Phase 1 and $90.65 million per year for Phase 2.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
I'm just wondering if those numbers are controlled for inflation or those nominal dollars?
Those numbers, Mr. Chair, Senator, those numbers include a CPI inflation factor of about 2.7% annually.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Our next slide shows the distribution of state-only taxes, the distribution of that based on the 20-year average of Phase 2 between 2011 and 2030. In total, that would be approximately $69.6 million per year over the 20-year period, of which 74.24% goes to the state through state sales taxes. So the vast majority of the taxes that are generated on a state level are specifically in the state sales tax category. The next largest category is state income taxes, and these are income taxes generated from mall employees. That totals approximately 17.7% of the overall state income stream per year through tax revenue. And then finally, the state property tax, which is just under 8% or $5.56 million per year. Overall and in summary, in 2015, Phase 2 alone is estimated to generate $43.3 million in state sales tax. This is the Phase 2 alone. Based on our visitor intercept studies in Mall Phase 1, approximately 50% of the sales generated on-site annually come from out-of-state visitors. Phase 2 will generate demand for approximately 15 million hours of construction workers. Over 85% of all labor materials in Phase 1 came from Minnesota companies, and we anticipate the same level of percentage in Phase 2. Ongoing construction at MOA since its opening has totaled $300 million since our original $650 million investment. In Phase 1, ongoing mall construction has created over 3,000 jobs in total. That concludes my overall presentation, and I'm happy to answer questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Armlin. I don't intend to get deep into the figures today. I know next week we'll have a much more detailed conversation about some of the details. But I do want to make a point, and wondering if you can help me with that as it relates to the local taxes paid. If we add up together what Bloomington taxpayers have put in, and I would, you know, this has been an interesting process as we've worked through this locally. The mayor and I have known each other for some time, and we just happen to disagree about this on the local request on this. And that's, local or elected officials don't always agree, and we don't happen to agree on this. And I would take a little bit to task that Bloomington taxpayers have not directly contributed, because in the tax committee every day we hear proposals where, whether it's jobsies or any number of different proposals where someone is going to pay less in taxes or is going to pay less than what the law would require them to pay in taxes. And to suggest that everyone else in the taxing jurisdiction isn't impacted by that, I think isn't being forthright. The reality is there's a tax shift. and in fact people in that jurisdiction do pay more. But Mr. Armland, can you tell me, because I know that you have a pretty good grasp of the numbers, what do Bloomington taxpayers owe back to the fiscal disparities pool as a result of paying the interest on advancing the road improvements from the first phase?
Working with Mr. Chair, Senator, working with city staff, Mr. Arneson, the mayor, we understand that the outstanding indebtedness is approximately $48 million related to that.
Thank you, Mr. Armland, Mr. Chair. And then Mr. Griffith or the mayor testified that the city of Bloomington, through tax increment financing and essentially not receiving taxes to the general fund, in the city have contributed in the first phase $108 million. Adding that up in the first phase without talking about the second phase, the city's contribution or city taxpayers' contribution is $156 million approximately. Now, because of the contract that was signed related to the second phase, that if we don't do a thing here at the legislature, what amount of money is available to the development if the development maxed out? And I know that's a big hypothetical. But if the development maxed out, how much more is the city on the hook for in that scenario?
Mr. Chair, Senator, the restated contract for redevelopment, which contemplates not only the development of Phase 1 but also the development of Phase 2, has a public-private ratio investment scale that's in the contract. And as the development size increases, the ratio decreases. It caps at 10%. So at approximately $1.8 billion, there would be approximately a 10% public-private share in total cost. So that would be approximately $180 million.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Armland. So,
Senator, if I may clarify, that $180 million it would be allowed under the contract, but there aren't revenue sources to cover it because of the loss of TIF.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Griffith, I understand that. Does the $180 million include the $50 million in fiscal disparities?
No,
repayments.
It does not.
So if you add 180 to 50, you're at about $230 million. I had a slightly different estimate. So without doing anything more, potentially the city could be on the hook for potentially $230 million in terms of investment in this development. And then as you move to phase two, the rest of phase two, and I would say that I'm not struggling with the city council on that $230 million or the mayor. The mayor wasn't there when the deal was cut on the $230 million, and neither was I. But we are here today, and the city is requesting an additional authority to tax forego taxes on an additional $53 million, which brings us up, as my math is, to about $283 million in local contribution. And the reason that I bring this up is I want committee members to understand that we're hearing a theme today about who benefits from the Mall of America, and that's the state. Everyone that's come before us has said this has been huge for the state because of our sales tax revenues and other revenues to the state. And the example I think about is the banker on our committee, Senator Metzen. If Senator Metzen, well, yeah, I know. That's what I'm bringing into Senator Metzen. Senator Metzen lends Senator Day $20.
He's that creditworthy.
All right, we already have a problem here. But Senator Metzen lends Senator Day $20, and over time, Senator Day pays Senator Bach back for Senator Metzen's investment. That's essentially the analogy that I think of as it relates to the mall. Bloomington taxpayers stuck their neck out and continue to and will be paying for a long time without actually receiving a full tax benefit for still quite a number of years. Until 2015 when the tax increment financing district decertifies, and that's the year where we have to start paying back fiscal disparities, which is almost a wash in and of itself. And so, members, I raise these issues because I think it's important for folks to understand how significant the local contribution has been. And, you know, I admit I'm in a tough spot. I oppose more local investment. I don't think Bloomington taxpayers should throw another nickel into this because they've already got potentially $230 million in the pot. That isn't to say that I think that it's not reasonable for us to have a discussion about whether we should make the Mall of America as large as we can, because it provides increased tax revenues for the state of Minnesota. And I'm additionally in a tough spot because I'm opposing provisions that locally, my, you know, the mayor and the city council are coming to the legislature and asking for the authority to tax our residents. And so I admit that I'm perhaps in a compromised position on this committee and in the Senate because we're, while I'm trying to hold off an additional contribution, there's a division locally about whether or not we ought to do that or not. But I want the members of the committee to understand how significant the local investment has been. And there have been some revenues. The mayor and Mr. Griffith testified that the schools over that period of time have received about $5 million, and that about $1 million a year in addition to services paid for come into the city. And there's the ancillary development argument, which certainly is valid. I won't argue that there aren't additional developments because of the Mall of America. But let's not forget the airport was there and is there and is still the large engine that drives 494. And the Mall of America is at its location because of where the location of the airport and its access to the downtowns. And so I think that we just need to have that in perspective as we consider our future here in moving something forward. So that, you know, we can there's sort of been a for years since I've been here, there's always sort of been a sense when people talk flippantly about the Mall of America, there's a lot of people around here that think that the state helped build the Mall of America. And in fact, the numbers show that the residents of Bloomington are the ones that stuck their neck out on this. And so I'll stop here, Mr. Chair. We'll have plenty of discussion about this next week, and I know there's other testifiers, and so I know you want to get through your agenda. But it's important for me to state to this committee and the members of the Senate that this is a really difficult issue locally, and there's a lot of conversation locally about whether or not we should put another nickel into the mall, and in fact, shouldn't the state be the one that pays for the next one? We got the first one. You pick up the second one.
Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, because I have a comment on that. Senator Larson, where were you at when Best Buy, when Richfield City took Walzer and Wally McCarthy and 80 homes and gave them $48 million and to build on the corner? Now, that's your district. That's because I can remember fighting this because I didn't believe that was a good location because of transportation. It had nothing to do with Best Buy. It had nothing to do with the loan and TIF district and all of that. But I went to the Richfield City Council meetings about three times because I didn't think it was a good corner to dump 5,000 cars on in the morning and 5,000 at night. But this is the city of Richfield, which you represent, and it was like lock, stock, and barrel. You people all move. We're putting up this place, and along with it, here comes a nice package, which probably will never be paid off by the citizens of Richfield. I think it was $48 million. I can't remember the exact number, over, I think, 22 years or whatever. So it's interesting that you're talking about Bloomington when I sat at the Richfield City Councils, and I don't remember any dialogue like this at that time.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Day, as you'll recall from your visits to the Richfield City Council, you probably didn't see me there because I wasn't a member of the Richfield City Council, and I didn't have a vote on whether or not they moved forward on their tax increment financing ordinance as it related to the Best Buy discussion. The Mall of America is also in my district, and the city of Bloomington and the Mall of America are sitting in front of us at the tax committee, and that wasn't the case back when the discussion came forward about Best Buy. So you raise an issue, though. There was a lot of controversy about that, and frankly, that played out in the courts. And I think we had some revisions to our tax increment financing laws as it related to what happened in Richfield. But the answer is I wasn't on the Richfield City Council. But I am in the Senate, and I am on the Senate Tax Committee, and the request is before us, and that's why I'm opening my mouth.
Mr. Chairman, fair enough.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and I don't want to get in between this, but, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this fiscal note, and Mr. Chairman, I don't know how you do it. I don't know how you can run a tax committee getting fiscal notes like this out of the Department of Revenue. This is kind of the stuff that we get in transportation. These fiscal notes have gotten more and more political all the time. Now, this fiscal note says general fund, fund impact. They don't know. But if you keep reading, there's a section in here about the sales tax and use on the construction materials, tax increment financing, the bonding and appropriation for $181 million parking lot and other things to happen. That's state money. But it still says zero up here. And then if you flip it over, this is where the guts are. You flip it over and... You know, first they want to say that this is a billion-dollar project, and I think I just heard you say it was like 1.5 to 1.7 billion. Is 1.
that 1.7?
Okay, 1.7. But they figure that that's $35 million over the $35,750,000 in taxes that aren't going to be paid. And then it goes on to talk about and okay, so. So they did put a number in there someplace. It says $35 million, but, you know, it doesn't show up over here where it says cost to the state. You know, so it's, you know, it's just one of these things that was thrown together and, you know, just strictly they want the project to go forward, you know, and in our committee where they want to stifle all the road projects. And you can ask Senator Dibble this. He had a deal for paratransit, and they came in with this – fiscal note that was in the hundreds of millions of dollars, and you know, it was just completely bogus. So I'm saying this one's bogus, and I think somebody ought to go back and sharpen their pencil a little bit. But here's the coup de grace, Mr. Chairman. The proposed exemptions to the general TIF provisions may have an impact on the local tax base and tax rates. May? Come on. You know, this is the Department of Revenue. I think they can do a little bit better than that. I mean, you know, and it's the same. This kind of goes along with the discussion that Senator Pogemiller started about, you know, don't try to come in here and you know, tell us that it never rains in Minnesota or it never snows, because I think we know a little bit better than that. And now the department's trying to do it. I just, you know, Mr. Chairman, I don't know how you do it. You know, I really don't know how you can run a tax committee and, you know, using documents like this. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm not talking about against the project right now, although I think that there's some things that need to be tightened up here. But, you know, this is bogus.
Senator Murphy, I have to defend the Department of Revenue some in that. They don't do fiscal notes on bills until bills are scheduled for hearings. This bill was introduced on Monday, and the hearing is Wednesday, and I think it is fair. Sometimes we see impact unknown or impact negligible, but that's why I indicated at the start of this hearing that we wouldn't talk about financing today, because we don't have the numbers. And this tax committee will be discussing that next week when the Department of Revenue does supply us with an updated fiscal note. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, I've got a suggestion. I think that it sounds like Mr. Armland's probably got a pretty good idea what the finances are. I think maybe we should ask him to do the fiscal note, and then, you know, we can take it out of the department's hide. We'll just put you on a little contract or whatever, and we'll let the department pay for it.
It does on the top of the fiscal note, Senator Murphy, say preliminary analysis. So, we have two other people. Senator Sendrum, before we move on.
Well, I just, you know, we're having a lot of fun here this morning, I guess, and Senator Murphy says he's not against the project or something like that. I don't know, your words don't seem to offer that, at least to me, but more seriously, you know, we have a tradition at this table, I think, and within the Senate, generally speaking, of maybe giving extra credence to the senator that is, if you will, the home senator on projects, wherever they might be. And in this case, it is Senator Larson. So, what I'm, you know, you said a lot of things, and I listened hard. But bottom line, are you simply opposed to this project going forward in your district? I guess that's my question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum. I'm glad you asked that question because I want to be clear that, in fact, no, not at all. Okay. I am not. In fact, I am certainly open to the conversation that we can have about if we've identified that the state is the major benefactor of an expansion or of the first phase, that if the state, in fact, sees fit to supercharge that development because the increased sales tax revenues will justify that, I think that's a really reasonable discussion for us to have, as we have it about many major projects. My concern is about the local funding piece. Because the original local funding piece was so, because the original public financing piece was so focused on local, on the local unit of government in this case, and, you know, at their request, and that's many years ago, and I'm not going to criticize those leaders. They helped put Bloomington on the map. Part of my argument has been you can't put the city on the map a second time. It's there. The second phase will develop either maybe half the size that's being requested if the market were allowed to work. And if the state participates or there is a public subsidy, it perhaps can be this 5+ million square foot addition. And so, no, I'm not opposed to having an expansion at the mall, but I am opposed to having local property taxpayers bear any greater part of the burden than they already are. And remind you that they already are on the hook if we did this full development for $85 million in the second phase, because of the contract that was signed during the first phase. And so local taxpayers will be contributing to the second phase $85 million in foregone taxes on the second phase. I just don't think we should add another $53 million to that. That's my position.
Mr. Chair, I don't know how far to belabor this, but, you know, TIF is kind of an upfront investment for a, you know, back-end payoff, and you know, so the city of Bloomington did make that upfront decision to allow for tax increments, and you know, they'll be paid off someday, and there'll be a lot of money coming, if you will, to the city of Bloomington, and that will be good for that city. And I'm sitting here only wishing, you know, all this would have happened in Rochester, and we wouldn't be having this discussion today, because I think we'd be going forward with the project. You know, could we have gotten it through this body? But you know, there is. I'm sure, on the other hand, Senator Larson, you wouldn't suggest that once the increments are paid off, that the state continue, if you will, to accrue the, you know, the local share. Of course, you want that to go to Bloomington, and there will be a fair amount of tax revenue coming to Bloomington once the increments are paid off, and there will be a day when that happens.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Senjum, here's the concern that Bloomington legislators have. You know, and I wasn't around when the first phase was developed, but essentially when I've talked to folks that were city council members and residents who were paying attention, so the sale job was, if you make this investment with mm-hmm. the TIF and other contribution fiscal disparities on the loan, someday there will be a road. As we go down that road, someday you'll get to the point where there'll be pots of gold at the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, when the Mall of America came forward with the city of Bloomington in his proposal from last year, the argument the city and the mall essentially made to the legislative delegation was, well, you know, those pots of gold that were at the end of the road, there's a lot less gold in the pots than we thought there would be. So let's roll all of that into the development, because if we head down a different road, at the end of that road, there'll be really big pots of gold. And, you know, last year the city's request and the mall's request was to extend the TIF on both the first phase and the second phase to 2035. Okay. And the Bloomington legislative delegation in unison said no way. Okay. And that's where we end up here. So I will admit that this year's proposal is an improvement on last year's. But as I've looked at this and spent a lot of time thinking about it and talked to a lot of constituents, I'm convinced that people in Bloomington are satisfied saying, we don't want to put in another nickel, and we'd rather have it develop as the market would allow it to develop than for us to continue to be on the hook. On the other hand, if the state wants to step in, we're okay with that, too.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Larson.
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and maybe more for Senator Sinjum. You know, Senator Sinjum, back when the Mayo brothers came to Minnesota, they wanted to set up shop over in Red Wing, and our fearless leaders at that time said, no thanks. You know, it was probably the worst decision the city of Red Wing's ever made. So instead of being known as the medical mecca of the world, you know, we're known as probably the best manufacturer of work boots in the world. And, you know, and I'm not trying to cut down the Red Wing Shoe Company at all, because they've been a wonderful, you know, it's been a wonderful employer for many people, some family members of mine, for a long time. But, you know, we missed that opportunity, and you know, I believe that Senator Larson is trying to make sure that his community not only realizes the full potential of this opportunity, but this is more of a state investment than it is anything else. I mean, every testifier that's come up there, the first thing they want to talk about is the economic impact of the state. And if that's the case, I don't believe that we need to have their property taxpayers on the hook for this. It was $200 and some million that Senator Larson had stated earlier. So I really believe that if this is going to go forward, you know, and I've got no problem throwing a little bit of transportation money at it, because, you know, this is an investment, and I believe it is a state investment. And, you know, sooner or later it all gets paid back. But when you talk about the back-end payoff to the property taxpayer, you know, those promises were made 15-plus years ago. It was before I was in the legislature, and they still haven't happened yet. You know, you could say that there's been some payoff, because, you know, there's a lot of people who live in Bloomington that work out there. That's a good thing. Hopefully they're using transit to get to work, but anyway, but the back-end payoff continues to move out and out and out, and I've seen it in the cities that I represent, and I know that you've seen it down in your district where, you know, we use TIF or some mechanism like that, and we always seem to extend those districts and continue to extend them and extend them. So when is the payoff back to the community? You know, jobs only go so far. You know, sometimes you need that greenback to make some things happen, like improve your schools or your infrastructure or whatever it may be. But you know, I'm like Senator Larson. I think, and I would hope that most of the people agree, that this is a benefit to the state. And if it is, let's make sure that the city of Bloomington and the property taxpayers out there aren't hoisting the whole load. Let's let Senator Bach carry a little bit of it in his bill. I mean, you know, he's a pretty big guy. I think he can hoist that around a little bit. So, you know, I got to run off to another meeting. But, Mr. Mayor, there's a lot of language in here about, you know, where the TIF district is, and, you know, it's all this mumbo-jumbo that I think only an engineer would understand about, you know, it's so many feet here and so many degrees, so many minutes, all that. But, you know, you've got a nice graphic here that kind of shows what the project looks like and everything. If, you know, we could get a little aerial that would show where each one of these parcels are at, you know, I'd appreciate that. Because one time we did one of these, and this is when I was chairing the sales and income tax meeting, and a TIF proposal was part of the overall package, and they'd done the aerial, but they had it off about 2,000 feet. And well, anyway, it was kind of interesting, but if I could see that, that would help out a lot. So thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Murphy.
Two more testifiers, Mr. Griffith, Mr. Armland, thank you.
Yeah.
From the Minneapolis Building Trades, David Yarba, and Dick Angfang from the Minnesota State Building Trades.
Sure.
Good morning, Chairman Metzen and Bach and members of the committee, senators. My name is Dick Anfang. I'm the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here today with David Ibarra, the business manager of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trades Council, and we're going to give you a little bit of a historic perspective of our relationship with the Mall of America. I will do that part of it, and David will carry, will talk about current and future relationships. I've had the privilege of working, first of all, our organizations encompass the entire state. We have 10 building trades councils. We divided up the state in geographic jurisdictions. The Mall of America is in the Minneapolis building trades jurisdiction. We have nearly 70,000 members, 113 local unions in all crafts, all affiliated with the state building trades. That is, you've heard that before, but it's important to this discussion. The state building trades and I've worked for the building trades for nearly 20 years. And in that 20 years, the Mall of America has played almost a continuous part on a very positive side. I remember the groundbreaking that was attended by Governor Perpich in the state building trades, and we had hundreds of construction workers out there, not only participating in the groundbreaking, but actually working on the site. It was a great day. We went on to build the mall safely, on time, on budget. The mall owners were very happy, and in that relationship that started in the discussion phase of the construction of phase one, we continued to grow together. They employed our members, and they continue to employ them to this day. As was stated, after the original construction, they continued to expand, maintain, provide a safe environment for their customers, for their tenants, and for the workers that work there. And we're very proud that they've chosen members of the Minnesota State Building Trades to provide those services because of the, they recognize us for the quality that we bring to the project, and they've been a good partner. We also, as a, another thing that I would like to mention as a state building trades, we brought this subject to all of the councils of the state building trades when we understood that they were proposing a phase two. We discussed it at convention. We had a resolution supporting it. And the fact we put it like similar to the legislative process, we put it in committee, we had discussion, we had floor discussion, and we have unanimous support from around the state. All of our building trades affiliates are supportive of this project, giving us the certainty that it's recognized not only by citizens of the state of Minnesota, but our members who are citizens of our jurisdictions and our and members of our unions recognize that the Mall of America makes Minnesota a better place to work and to live. So with that, I just wanted to assure you that we started with the Mall of America. We hope to continue with the Mall of America and support them, and we ask you to do all you can do to come up with the proper decisions to move this forward. And with that, I'll hand it over to David Ibarra, the business manager of Minneapolis Building Trades, whose leadership and counsel will work with the mall in the future to get it constructed again on time and on budget and safely.
Thank you, Dick. Good morning, Mr. Chairman Bach and Chairman Metzen. As stated, my name is David Ibarra. I am the business manager for the Minneapolis Building Trades Council. If I may, I'd like to provide a little snapshot of what exactly the organization that I represent is. The Minneapolis Building Trades Council is the largest local council in the state of Minnesota, representing 29 affiliated unions and approximately 25,000 working men and women in the construction industry in the greater Minneapolis area. It's unfortunate that Senator Murphy had to leave. I was going to add that many of these folks do wear Red Wing boots to work every day. The delegates of the Minneapolis Building Trades Council are on record supporting the phase two expansion of the Mall of America. This next portion sounds a bit redundant. It may be. These are numbers that you've heard, but I think they are very significant numbers from our perspective. Construction of phase two will provide 7,000 jobs. That is 15 million working hours with an estimated payroll of $800 million. The projected construction schedule is 38 to 40 months. For those of you not familiar with our industry, a 40-month project is an eternity. Very seldom do projects last more than 2 years, much less 3.5. This will be the largest commercial construction project ever built in the state of Minnesota. As President Anfang stated previously, the relationship between the building trades and mall ownership and management has been tremendous. Phase one was a project that came along when the construction industry in Minnesota was slow, kept many workers from being unemployed. The ongoing tenant improvement work, estimated at $300 million, has also kept many members employed over the past 15 years. The phase two expansion of the Mall of America is a project that is viewed with great anticipation by the Minneapolis building trades, its members, and affiliates. Frankly, it couldn't happen fast enough. Unemployment for some affiliates is at levels not reached in this area since the early 1990s. This project would go a long, long way towards taking care of that problem. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Chairman Bach. To the testifier, yesterday, 15 unemployed union electricians came to visit me. Some of them have run out of benefits, and they've used up all of their savings. I'd like to echo what you just said, that this couldn't happen soon enough.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the testimony from Mr. Ybarra and Mr. Anfang. I just wanted to ask, though, the construction is just one part of this, and there are going to be a number of jobs that we heard about that are created at the site, at the hotels, at the restaurants, at the various stores, and I'm wondering your thoughts about assisting in efforts to make sure that those are good-paying jobs, those are union jobs. I think there's been some concern about that articulated, and wondering if you're willing to spend some time and effort helping your brothers and sisters and some of the other unions who are going to be taking those jobs.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I think we'd have to have our head in the sand to realize that the Minnesota Building Trades is a major part of the trade union movement in the state of Minnesota. We also realize that there are other unions that have concerns about what their position is right now. And knowing that, I brought that to the committee in preparation for this meeting today and asked them what their response would be when and or if there are other affiliates of the Minnesota AFL-CIO that come to them with them. And as a labor leader, I wanted to know what their position would be in terms of how they would respond to other unions. So I asked that question. It was answered by Mr. Griffith, and therefore I'd like to have you ask him that same question as to how they would handle other affiliates of the AFL-CIO. Are we good trade unionists? Yes, we are.
Well, my question is, I think we're all kind of, Mr. Chair, we're all kind of in this together, and we're all looking for a benefit for ourselves as well as a broader public benefit, and I think, calls upon us to look broadly at the implications of this whole project.
I would like to hear, hopefully Mr. Griffith could reiterate what he reiterated to the team yesterday, and I think from that you'll see that we know there's concern.
Mr. Griffith?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Senator, thank you for the question. Our position as expressed at our meeting yesterday and going forward is we will meet with anybody anytime who has an interest in this project, and we will hear them out, and we will listen to their concerns, and it will be up to the legislature how those concerns are addressed in this bill. But we are open to talking to anybody. We believe that this project is a benefit not just for the construction trades, but also for everybody who works there. And I want to say in response to a question that was asked earlier, we have very good-paying jobs at the mall. There's kind of this misnomer that somehow these are bottom-of-the-barrel jobs. There are about 2,000 managers who work at the mall who earn over $50,000. The median wage at the mall is over $35,000, and all of the mall employees that are directly employed by management have health care, disability, and 401k. And so these are good-paying jobs, and I want people to understand that, because there's somehow this idea out there that if you work at Mall of America or even in retail, that you're not making a lot of money. But having said that, we are certainly willing to talk to folks who would support us in the hotel and hospitality positions. The one thing that we have to understand is that Mall of America is not building hotels and restaurants. our co-developers are. And so we have to make sure they're at the table as well. Because if anything happens that requires a commitment from a hotel developer, they've got to be part of the package. But having said that, we're willing to talk. We'll sit down, you know, as early as tomorrow with anybody who's got an issue with this project going forward.
Chair.
Senator Langsa.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, I'm one of the few people probably that was here in the Senate at the time that the first phase came about. I think one difference between that one and this one is first phase had a great cheerleader with Governor Perpich, and I think it's safe to say it would never have happened if it wasn't for Governor Perpich. Now, if you remember the governor, he had all kinds of ideas and got all very enthused about a lot of things. But I think the legislature responded to a lot of those things in the right way, that we kind of held it off. We took a good look at it. When I heard all the projections that were being made about all the people he's going to bring in from all over the world, I thought, oh, yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. But then I went up to Edmonton, to the mall up there, and the legislature did take a good long look at it. And Governor Perpich was very, very frustrated that we didn't just grab a hold of it and run. But I think we did the job that the legislature should do. The project did come about, and I think most, if not all, of the projections that were made have come about. I think it's been very, very good for the state of Minnesota. So I think at this point we should do the same thing. We should take a very good look at this. I think there's a lot of very good potential here, and if, to the extent that there's problems, we can work through them. But I don't think we have that spark plug out in the front pulling us this time. I think we've got to decide ourselves just whether or not this project is good for the state of Minnesota and how we put it together to make it work to the benefit of everybody. But I certainly hope that we don't decide to sandbag this just because there's some problems with it.
Senator Metzen.
Chairman, Mr. Ybarra or Mr. Anfing, maybe I should know this, but was there a project labor agreement on the first phase of the?
Yes, there was.
Okay. And it just, okay, to piggyback on that, I would think that that should be part of this legislation if we go forward. So
whether it's not part of the legislation, I have been assured by management and ownership that there will be a labor agreement included in this project.
Then Mr. Chairman, we'll, if you've been assured of that, we'll just put it in writing, okay?
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When I look at the employment opportunities out of this project, that to me is kind of a subjective judgment. The objective part of it, and I don't know if we've had any analysis, what does these jobs represent as far as an income tax claim every year that the state of Minnesota could see as a benefit? We've talked about the $800 million worth of salaries, I think, was mentioned. What would that represent in income that may not necessarily be generated in the state of Minnesota if this project is not done? I think that probably gives us a clear perspective of whether or not the TIF investment is a good one. And if it is a good one, it should be pretty obvious. I think as I look at some of these big TIF projects before, if you can divide up the year of life that the TIF project would represent, and then simply look at the return just on the return just on the single job that generates as far as an income tax, and we know that those jobs are going to create secondary jobs and secondary demand for that salary, employing other people. But just looking at the primary job and looking at the primary income tax that those jobs generate, I think it would be pretty obvious to me that it's going to pay for itself fairly soon.
Senator Limmer, I think that's a pretty good point. I think we all realize that blue-collar construction worker jobs are some of the higher-paid blue-collar people in the state, and that's, you know, next week we might have to do it in one of the evenings, but the tax committee is going to spend some time on trying to figure out if we can find a way to finance
what state participation there may be in this project. So far, I haven't heard anything from the governor's office, whether he supports it or doesn't support it or wants us to discuss it, but I'm hoping that the Senate, absent the governor's position, the Senate is willing to kind of bring this project, I think, to the public's attention and the economic impact that this has for our citizens. And I'm sure, I don't see a lot of the press in the room, but I'm sure they're probably watching. I think in tomorrow morning's newspaper story, it would be helpful if somebody in the press were to ask the governor if he thinks the legislature, if this is worth the legislature's time to spend on this project. Because I think if we're going to move it forward into a final bill to the governor, we're going to have his input. And Senator Langseth is exactly right. The first phase of the mall largely happened because of Governor Perpich being the cheerleader for it. And major things like this need support from the administration. So I'm hoping that in tomorrow's paper we can get some indication where the administration's position is on it.
Mr. Chair, could we instruct our fiscal analyst to get some type of estimate of what kind of income tax these jobs would generate, not only the employment jobs, but also the retail jobs that would be generated, if there is any estimate on it. And if there's an independent estimate on it, perhaps we could clarify that from a government perspective. I think that would make our choice pretty easy to do.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer, I think that's a good point, and Senator Larson has been working with counsel on some alternatives, and we'll have it'll be a good discussion for us next week. But I think you're right. I mean, we know that 15 million hours, at a minimum, those people are paying a couple bucks an hour in state income taxes, looking at what their payroll is. So there's a pretty significant payback. Mr. Armland, have you got something to add on that?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, we have done an analysis on the construction income tax, and conservatively, we believe that approximately $28 million, almost $29 million, will be generated solely in income tax just from construction labor. That's over the duration of the construction period. If you want to look at the overall in terms of total, and this is in an operational setting, per year, we look at income taxes being approximately $10.3 million per year starting in 2011 to 2015 and going on annually. That's from retail construction or retail workers in the shopping center and the other associated elements of Phase 2 development per year.
Senator Limmer, not too bad of the back of a napkin math at $2 an hour, was it? My Carpenter's Union card was 30 years old last June, so.
Mr. Chair, I only wish I could do my real estate calculations that that well.
Senator Dibble?
Yes, Mr. Chair, just picking up back up on that project labor agreement, I'm really glad to hear that that's in the works for the trades as we construct the facility. I'd love to see, you know, an SEIU or an HERE or a UFCW up at this table falling all over themselves about what a great idea this this project is, so that we have some assurance that the jobs going forward will be the kind of desirable jobs. Nice to hear that people are willing to talk to people, but, you know, as Senator Metzen said, let's get something in writing.
Senator Lotz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure who to ask the question of, so I'll just throw it out there, and whoever is capable of answering it, please do. And I'm sorry if you covered some of this already, but I had another meeting to attend to. Two questions, really. One is the Performing Arts Center that is identified in some of the materials as anticipated to be part of Phase 2, is that a center that would compete in any way with existing performance venues in Minnesota, such as Xcel Energy Center, Target Center, Metrodome, or any other such venues? And the second question is, what, if any, impact would the proposed $181 million going toward parking have on other hoped-for bonding projects in the state of Minnesota?
Well, to the second, Senator Lotz, the financing is an issue the tax committee is going to take up next week. So we don't know an answer to that yet.
and Senator Larson has been working along with Senate Counsel and our fiscal staff to kind of identify how we can, what state participation there might be in that parking facility. But Mr. Griffin.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you for saving me from the second question since I don't have an answer to that question. The first question I can answer, and we've looked at it closely, one of the initial propositions when you do something of this nature is you want to fill voids in the market. You don't want to overlap with other facilities. You don't want to take from other facilities because it doesn't really raise all boats. And so when we looked at the entertainment venues, the opportunity, Anschutz Entertainment Group is proposing a 6,000-seat music theater. Okay, it's not a performing arts center. That's probably misnamed. It's a music theater. It has no fly loft, so you can't do Broadway productions and shows that are done downtown or either downtown. And it's 6,000 seats. Currently, there is not a state-of-the-art 6,000-seat facility in the marketplace. There are smaller facilities and there are larger facilities, but there's a niche that's not served here. We met with Mayor Chris Coleman, for instance. We wanted to understand St. Paul's position because we've been at the table with St. Paul in pitching the convention business that's coming to town, the Super Bowl, many of the regional events that have come here. We've been at the table as regional partners. So we wanted to understand how our regional partner viewed this facility. And what we did in follow-up to that meeting is we took the Nokia Theater in Dallas and looked at all of the dates of the Nokia Theater. I think it's like 128 dates. I can give you the letter that came from AEG. There were four overlapping dates. So maybe 4% of the dates are competitive. 96% of the dates are non-competitive. So there is some overlap, but it's very minimal. The second thing we looked at is what is the opportunity and who is presenting the opportunity. Anschutz Entertainment Group is building these facilities all over the world. They tour shows at the XL. They're bidding on the contract for the Target Center. So why would Anschutz Entertainment Group come in and propose a facility that's going to take their own lunch at the XL or the Target Center? They wouldn't do that. They're one of the largest in the country. They're building all over the country, and they have said to us, this is a niche that's going to be served somewhere in this marketplace. We believe the best place to serve it is at Mall of America because of the package of attractions, the visitors coming in from out of town, and so forth. But to your question, and I'm glad you raised it, we do not believe it's competitive with either downtown.
Senator Lutz.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for that answer. I'm encouraged by that. It's no secret the kind of concerns that have been around the state with regard to the competition in venues and the impact on taxpayers as well as the management and operation of those venues specifically. I'm not on the tax committee, so I won't be here next week when you consider the amount of state participation. I'm not in principle opposed to using TIF for the kind of infrastructure. I think if the city of St. Paul had been willing to do some of that work when West Publishing was looking at it, West would still be in downtown St. Paul. St. Louis Park. Well, TIF is the only tool, frankly, that a lot of suburbs now, a lot of communities have for redevelopment to compete in any meaningful way with the greenfields in outer suburban communities. I've got no problem with that and focused on those particular types, but I know in St. Louis Park, and I served 9 years on the city council there, so I was involved in a lot of our redevelopment, including Excelsior and Grant. I don't think we had any state bonding money involved in that process. Like everyone in the legislature, I've got some particular bonding projects that I would like to see funded that would have direct impact on my communities, and I'd be concerned that the particular financing tool looked at here would crowd out some of those priorities in my community and other communities, or would have the impact not only in that but on broader regional impacts as well. I know that the amount of dollars is more than it would cost to reconstruct Highway 100 on a permanent basis. I don't know what the actual fiscal connection there would be, but it's a lot of money to look at. And maybe the only difference is the scale in some ways, but it's a big scale. So there's my 2 cents worth for your committee meeting next week.
Senator Lutz, those are very good observations when it comes to state bonding. what we have in the bill today is a proposal from the city of Bloomington. And that's what's been introduced, and that's the TIF that we're going to consider, and that is where we're going to start as a starting point of determining what kind of state participation there might be or other participation by maybe people that frequent the mall, what kind of a package the tax committee can put together. I guess we're going to work on that between now and the end of the session. Senator Carlson.
Well, I wanted to make a couple of comments about it. The this really seems like a very good project, but it does concern me the couple of questions that were asked earlier on the average wages, for instance, and the average benefit and wage package. If obviously when it's under construction, there's a lot of very good wage jobs with benefits that are going to be people that are going to be employed there. But then afterward, what's the resulting occupation look like, and what is the average there? Can those people afford to buy homes in Bloomington, for instance? And I think it's a good project for some, but we want to make it a good project for as many people as possible. And I want to echo what Senator Larson said here, is that there's a disparate advantage that happens. And one of the things I was interested in was this notion of, there was a statement made that 50% of the taxable sales are to people outside of Minnesota. Last year, I called the Mall of America in view of trying to get some kind of information on stadiums, and I was told I couldn't get that information. I couldn't get the information on sales tax that was collected at the Mall of America, nor even daily attendance. But I'm glad that you've come up with some numbers here. But the sales tax and the income tax are paid to the state of Minnesota. And what I tend to think is that that's, to some degree, a way that we avoid having county income tax and city income tax and city sales tax and lots of other distributed taxes. And I think it's up to the state of Minnesota to share that income with the cities. And what I looked at it was that this is LGA, and LGA was cut back. And LGA, now we're looking at reinstating LGA for back to the older levels. And I looked at Richfield is going to get a reinstatement of $1.885 million. But Bloomington only gets $296,000. And that's primarily because of the property value in Bloomington, and that includes the Mall of America. So what's happened here is the Mall of America actually hurts Bloomington from getting more LGA back. And so I think what we need to do is look at this on a macro scale, that the state of Minnesota, yes, is going to get a pretty good benefit, but we don't really want to have the city of Bloomington be on the hook. So thank you for that.
Senator Carlson, those are good points. I believe if we look at the state budget, about 10% of the state budget is aid to local governments, either county or city. It's a pretty significant funding level that the state participates in helping carry out services at the local level. And anything that brings in income tax or sales tax to the state allows us to continue and hopefully increase that commitment to local government. So I do think anything that generates revenue is helpful. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. I think Senator Johnson wanted to respond directly to this point. I just wanted to I'll just be very brief. I just wanted to echo, second, what Senator Latz, the items that Senator Latz mentioned. But Senators Moy and myself are on the tax committee, so we'll be able to speak a little bit more about the public investment that are in some of the downtown facilities, and we want to be sure that if we're going to be putting public money towards something like this, that we're not directly undermining those previous regional and statewide investments in those facilities. As well, I can't imagine it takes $118 million to build a parking ramp, but maybe I don't know how expensive parking ramps are, but $118 million, or is it $181 million? $181 million gets you a lot of transit up and down American Boulevard and to and from the airport. So maybe we can take a look at what our transportation choices are in the context of this project.
Takes a lot of concrete, Senator Dibble, to park 8,000 cars.
Maybe we don't need to park that many cars if we make some different kinds of investments, Mr. Chair.
Senator, to that point, Senator Dibble, as you know, I've got a bill in as it relates to essentially American Boulevard, so maybe that can be part of the conversation.
All right.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Carlson's statement, I wanted to, being a long-term tax committee member, a lot of that $250,000 you mentioned for Bloomington might be that they were doing a very, very good job of budgeting, that they only needed $259,000 in LGA prior to the 2001 draw cutbacks, or 2003, I think it happened in. But if they didn't, if they're only allocated for $259,000, they were doing a really good job with their money.
Well, from what I understand, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson, from what I understand from counsel, or from the analyst here, is that there is the formula includes or takes in consideration the property value in the city. That's part of the entire formula for calculating that aid.
There's
several expressions in that formula, but it is one of them. And it's at
$296,000. Senator Bach, I just want to thank you for having this hearing this morning, and I especially want to thank the Mall of America people for coming forth. The very notion that you're willing to come forward and put $1.8 or $9 billion into our state is refreshing. I think let's not forget that as we argue the details. You're here this morning with a wonderful proposal. My good friend to the right here says this isn't an economic engine. That would be like calling Disneyland not an economic engine. I don't think anybody in Florida would believe that. This is a huge economic engine for this state, and frankly for this country, and so as we go forward, we can work out the details, hopefully. But I just again want to thank you for your confidence in Minnesota and you're willing to step up and put this addition on this facility. I think we have to make it work somehow. Thank you, Senator Sundrum, and we have a lot of businesses that drive Minnesota's economy. Red Wing Shoes and Senator Murphy's district is certainly one of them also. And when we put all those aggregate parts together, they all contribute to the quality of life of our state. And certainly nobody wants to think that the University of Minnesota is less important than anything else, or the Mayo Clinic and everything we have that make our state what it is. Mr. Griffith, we're going to have you back next week. I'm guessing members of the Tax Committee will probably have an evening meeting to talk about trying to figure out some financing on this Monday, Tuesday, maybe Wednesday, early next week anyway. I think we need a couple of hours to spend on trying to figure out if we can advance this along so that we can get it hopefully included in the Senate tax bill. If we can't, then we may have to leave it for another day, but that's the chair's hope. Is anybody else in the audience? We got a couple minutes. Anybody else in the audience want to testify on the mall proposal?
Mr. Chairman, Senators, thank you for all your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you to the members of the Business Committee for joining us here today. Tax Committee meets tomorrow morning, 8:30. This meeting's adjourned.